Oh, hey there. I am Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. I'm sorry I wasn't as high-pitched and enthusiastic as I am most times when I do this. Sometimes I just have a different mood going on, you guys. You can't blame me for it. All right, with me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Wynton Mitchell.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, Guy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
You've got a very comfortable-looking outfit on. It's rarely a compliment. But
do I look like a lesbian?
No, actually.
No, you look more you like look a like, Jedi master.
I was going to go the Jedi route.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. That's great.
More Jedi masters with buns, I would like to see. Maybe Qui-Gon had one. We got journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hey, Guy, what's up?
I'm just feeling a little bit, I'm like not quite sick. I'm just like tired all the time.
Yeah.
I feel you.
And well, you're literally turning your body into a beverage for someone else to eat. So it makes sense that you're tired.
Mm-hmm. I look like one big Slurpee to most people.
And we got pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Toxin.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers.
What are you turning into a beverage these days, Karen?
I'm just turning into a giant latke at this point.
Yay,
I'm essentially made of shredded onion and potatoes.
I'm not going to ask you whether my latkes were the best because I have confidence in my latkes. My game is strong.
They were tight.
I know. My applesauce was over-reduced. Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be talking about the best of the worst in popular culture, inspired by the disaster artist, James Franco's homage to Tommy Wiseau's The Room. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Wynton Mitchell.
Yeah.
What are you all about?
Trump's Hall of Presidents.
Okay.
I know. Did I switch gears on you?
No, it's perfectly fine.
Okay.
You know that our Drag Daughter podcast, Las Culturistas,
yes,
had a hard stance on it. Matt Rogers was very worried and excited about what Trump would look like there, and he is very satisfied with what a shit show this is. What about you?
Beyond satisfied. Because I was like, I thought about it when he was first elected, like before, when he won. First, there was the shock and the awe. You go through the seven stages of trauma. Then I got to the part where I was like, all the things he's going to be in for the next, like, 150 years. And then, of course, the number one thing, I was like, the Epcot Center Hall of Presidents. And, I mean, like, he looks like a melted John Voight.
And John Voight's already pretty melted,
but he's got like that California tan going for him and that long scarf he likes to throw on. Then also his suit's too big, his tie is too big, and they've even got the finger hand, tiny hands thing going. It's more like I don't like that he's going down in the history books, but what I am really proud of is that Disney, as hard of a stance as they take on, I'm not even going to give them credit on how they're correct about so many things in terms of, like, you know, Pocahontas actually fell in love with homeboy or whatever.
Yes.
Who cares about him? I'm going to give them credit for actually just throwing in some shade. I mean, yes. The conversation I'm sure he had with Bob Iger was amazing. I'm sure that he's completely lost his shit. He's not sleeping tonight and his shits are runny.
Oh.
I don't know how to come back.
So that's my take. I have nothing else to add.
Fair. Karen Toxin, what are you all about this week?
Speaking of shitty.
Whose shits do you think are running?
Apropos runny shits. You know, I am in like the doldrums of entertainment right now. It's like holiday season. I'm largely exhausted. There's not much. I'm just like I'm promiscuous.
Ooh.
Like being pop culturally promiscuous with Netflix. And I just watched and enjoyed Masterminds, the 2016 film with Zach Galifianakis, Kristen Wiig, and everybody else, Owen Wilson. You know, since we are talking about, you know, crappy, the best of the worst, I feel like this might be among the best of the worst things from 2016. And, you know, it was as if, like, Snatched, that movie with Goldie Hawn.
Yes.
And Amy Schumer, like, turned into more of a caper, like kind of Bonnie and Clyde meets Snatched. I know that's not a ringing endorsement, but it was a thoroughly entertaining 90-ish minutes.
The thing about it is I like comedies like that so much that I've gotten to a point where I get scared to watch them on Netflix because I don't want to be disappointed. And like the Bad Moms one, like I still haven't watched that, and I think it maybe is really good. I don't know.
Yeah, but maybe saying, that's my next move.
But you're saying I should definitely consider consuming this.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I think that you know, I tend to like a romantic comedy, and there's a rom-com aspect to this.
Okay.
And also some resonances. You know, we can think about its portrayal of class and regionality vis-a-vis I, Tonya, which we talked about last week. So I think that there's something about the way this film portrays, you know, working white people, working class white people that, I don't know, is worth thinking about in our contemporary age.
Margaret, what
I'm stroking my chin.
What do you think is worth contemplating in our whatever age?
Yeah, what age is this? It's about to be 2018, so this is apropos of that. Lately, my husband and I have gotten really into this app called 1 Second Every Day. It's been around for a little bit, but we just kind of discovered it. And basically, David started recording it right at the very end of my pregnancy. So what you do is you just take a little movie every day, something in your life, and then you snip out 1 second. And you drop it into the app, and basically it strings together all of the seconds and makes a little movie of them. So, yeah, so every day you drop something in, and you get to just watch these seconds grow and become this really kind of choppy, interesting, vivid movie about your life. And we've shown it to friends and family, and it's surprisingly moving. I mean, for one thing, because there is, like, you see me giantly pregnant at the very beginning, and then you see this baby come out shortly thereafter, and you're seeing him grow. And in fact, one of the ways that people use it is to track their baby's growth. You know, just take a second a day from the moment they're born on. And you can go onto YouTube and watch some of those videos, and they're beautiful, just like quick flashes of a little infant's face just growing, growing, growing. But obviously, there's all kinds of ways you can use it, and I want to recommend it to everyone to get for the beginning of the new year so that you can document your 2018 1 second at a time.
Margaret, this is a very self-indulgent joke, but I think that you should monitor Silas's growth through water displacement. I think you should drop him into a full pot of water every day, weigh the water that comes out of it. It's just Archimedes style.
Is this okay? Oh, okay. So this is like an old science joke.
Exactly. It's a hilarious.
I love an old science.
Old science.
Does it have to be a video that you drop in, Margaret, or can it be a photograph? Is it
no? It has
video?
To be a video.
A video. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Interesting.
Can't be a still.
Motion energy.
Yes.
This week I am all about Beatrice at Dinner, which I finally watched on Netflix. Have you seen it, Winter?
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's
like,
so good.
It is. Salma Hayek plays a massage therapist and sort of like spiritual healer who goes to Connie Britton's house in a gated community in Newport Beach. Her car breaks down, and so she has to stay for dinner with John Lithgow as like evil billionaire who destroys the planet. And the whole way through, I just kept thinking I knew what this movie was going to be, that it was going to be like a game of awkwardness. And I kind of hate movies like that. And it wasn't. Mike White, who wrote School of Rock and so many other...
And The Good Girl.
Like so many great things. He wrote it, and it, like, what being in a movie where I legitimately did not know what was going to happen, seeing Salma Hayek and John Lithgow as two people who conceived of themselves as equals. Like, one of them is, like, Latina service staff at this home that is so, like, Orange County hierarchical. And John Early plays a really interesting role as, like, gay guy who facilitates things in the home that almost just like underlines the fact that this is about a hierarchy in our society. And Beatrice at no moment believes that anyone, like, she is there to help everyone, but she is everyone's equal.
Yeah.
And watching that duel is wonderful. There are some things that happen that are so plausible and you buy into them so completely. And the end of the movie, immediately after I watched it, I was like, what a great 2/3 of a movie. He couldn't land that plane. Mm-hmm. And the more I think about it, the more I think, no, he was just saying something super profound about our society.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that movie. What's another thing about it is, like, everyone in that movie is fucking great. It is Chloe Savini. It is what's his name? The brothers who make the Mumblecore movies, Jay Duplass. Amy Landecker. Like, everyone in every role is super great, which means that all of these things, which should turn into two-dimensional cartoons, are three-dimensional cartoons. And it's really good and is, like, a nice, like, it goads people who believe that they are nice white liberals so wonderfully, and also just gives you, like, a heroine of a sort you have not seen before. She is, at every moment in that movie, magnificent.
How many, like, just straight up reads does she give him?
It's what's even better. What's like, because she, like, lays into him a couple of times, and she's somebody who's been so, like, nice and supportive, and you're reading it as deferential, and then Connie Britton tries to shut her up, and she just says, without breaking eye contact with Lithgow, "Shut up, Connie," or whatever her name is, and it's like, oh no, like, no, no one here knows what they were in for. Like, nice. It's a weird movie. It's so good, particularly if you're from Southern California. Take a look. All right. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk about the best, worst movies and TV and music and other stuff after this.
Hey, Max Fun listeners, it's Jesse, the founder of MaximumFun.org. I have some pretty incredible holiday news for you. So you remember last year's Max Fun Drive? We offered pins for all of our shows to folks who donated, and we agreed to donate all of the net revenue from the pins to the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank. Well, I, just yesterday, had the chance to hand a giant check to a representative from the food bank. You're not going to believe how much money you gave to give needy families food. Over $100,000. $100,365, to be specific. That means nearly 500,000 meals for families who need food this year. I'm really proud of every single Maximum Fund donor who made this possible. It's a remarkable achievement, a beautiful thing. It completely obliterated my idea and expectation of what we might be able to do this year. So, as you head into 2018, please be proud of what this amazing community did for hungry families in the Los Angeles area where Max Fun is based. If you'd like to keep the love rolling, go to lafoodbank.org/maximumfun. That's lafoodbank.org/maximumfun, and you can make a tax-deductible donation there. Every dollar that you give means 4 meals for needy families. Thanks to all of you who support everything that we do, and thanks for your incredible contribution to folks who need it here in our hometown.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell,
Margaret Wappler,
and Karen Tongson.
Before we get to tonight's topic, we have a Jumbotron. Winter.
What?
Jumbotron. Jumbotron.
I feel like we need like a news.
Can we get some like Morse code?
Yes.
We want fireworks noises.
Sherry Bissell is America's cheerleader for the Italian cinema. Visit her site, iloveitalianmovies.com, for all the news and fun of modern Italian film.
Ooh. Life is a beautiful.
That's beautiful.
Sherry believes that the best films being made right now are coming out of Italy. This isn't about La Dolce Vita and Il Postino. It's about new, bold directors, actors, and projects that are rivaling movies being made in the U.S. but aren't getting enough credit. Sherry reviews movies, covers award shows, interviews actors and directors, and doesn't take herself too seriously. She makes going to Italian cinema a funzo.
Funzo.
Is that a kind of pasta?
Funzarelli.
Colosseum.
Baked funzarelli. Where is it?
If you want your message read by us, just go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. All right, you guys. We've had to spend the past 15 years just watching all of James Franco's notions in all of their ways. Once he gets a little pho into that kepi, we have to watch at least a movie about it. And his most recent project is The Disaster Artist, a film where he recounts the making of The Room, which if you're from Los Angeles, you have spent the past 15 years seeing billboards for. It is a notoriously bad movie that was self-produced by a guy named Tommy Wiseau, who no one knows anything real about. Maybe Winter does, because she knows people. So we wanted to talk a little bit about The Disaster Artist, but also just about those pieces of culture that we think are beyond camp, to the point of schlock, things that are so bad they are in their way satisfying to watch. Had anyone here seen The Room before this mess?
Yes.
I think only Winter had.
Yeah.
And how were you acquainted with it?
Well, okay. This is why I love The Disaster Artist so much.
Yeah.
When I first moved here, I moved here in 2002, and I moved here with the excitement and the passion of taking this city over,
yeah,
like most people did. I think people did it more earnestly and like authentically 15 years ago than they do now.
Yes.
They can be famous with their phone in Peoria.
Right.
And I remember driving around and going to clubs at night, and he had billboards everywhere in Hollywood. I lived on the West Side at the time. So I just remember thinking, like, everybody had billboards. If you were like mildly connected and did something that like you were friends with like someone who was a producer, you kind of had a billboard.
For those of you who aren't from Los Angeles, there's this lady named Angeline who drives around, yeah, in a pink car. She would buy billboards for herself,
yes,
and just sort of like self-promotion.
No real thing of what they're doing or who they are, but
yeah,
they're infamous because of it. And there was an assortment of people like this in LA when you first got here, but he had the best location because he was on Highland in Santa Monica, which was highly trafficked at that time for other stuff, and also just a huge intersection going all the way up to the valley.
Winter means prostitutes.
I don't want to shame the sex workers. So
I think there's no shame. Shame and sex work.
Exactly. So that was my first experience with it, but I didn't actually see the movie until 2010.
Oh, okay.
So a friend had a DVD copy of it, which I think is like a rarity right now.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it, and I don't know, you guys haven't seen it, but if you know when you watch a movie and then you don't think anything about it that day, and then like 3 or 4 days later, you're like, fuck, what the fuck was I watching? What did I do? That is that movie.
There was a period of time when he had TV ads, and so all I knew about the Room was, Lisa, you're tearing me apart.
Yeah, that's my main way into it as well, the meme way.
Like, did you enjoy the film without having seen the Room?
I thought it did an amazing job of actually making the film enjoyable for someone who had just really recently heard about The Room,
yeah,
and people talking about The Room and hearing Winter talk about The Room. And, you know, spoiler alert, everyone, one of the things that they accomplish in the end credits is a kind of side-by-side shot. Shot for shot of the scene that they reenacted in The Disaster Artist as it appeared in The Room, mm-hmm, which I got a kick out of, and it made me want to see The Room,
yeah,
right away. So, so you know, I think it was successful at telling this tale. I think, though, that part of that move at the end of the credits was also about establishing for those people who don't know this film exists that this actually happened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it pulled that off successfully.
You know, Tom Bissell, who wrote a book all about the Room,
uh-huh,
basically, he had a great quote that The Room is like a movie made by an alien who has never seen a movie but has had movies thoroughly explained to him.
That's exactly what it is.
I've watched like 10 or 15 minutes of clips of it on YouTube.
Yeah, I've done the same.
And it really is stunning. Like, I think my favorite part is they spend a lot of time throwing a football around without anyone knowing how,
yes,
you throw a football.
Yes.
Like, it's just so...
And the portrait of spoons in the one shot, where there's just, like, several framed photos of spoons behind him.
Like, does... schlock have watching something that is supposed to be so bad it is good? Does it have appeal for Margaret Wappler?
Maybe not as much as other people in this room. I find that I like the idea of schlock more than I like actually investing the time in watching schlock. And I think, you know, we've talked about camp in the past. And obviously, camp and schlock are very related, if not even the same thing, depending on the movie. But I have this idea that camp, or rather schlock, is sort of like the hetero version of
it's
camp.
For boys. It's for boys.
It's ham-fisted. It's not subtle and witty in the way that camp can be. It's,
ha-ha, look at this dumbass.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think in that sense, like, I if I had to side on one or the other, like seeing something campy or seeing something schlocky, I would pick camp.
Okay, I would like to offer a piece of culture to you, and I would like us in this room to determine whether it is camp or schlock. I present to you The Family Stone, which, based on its status as, like, a woman-y movie, you would be inclined to call it camp. But I would say the charm of that movie, and that movie is charming, I do rewatch it with regularity, is the fact that it is so misguided in the way that it thinks people work or who we're sympathizing with.
Give me the synopsis again, because I can't think of it.
Sarah Jessica Parker shows up with her fiancé to his family's home. They are nice liberals who torture her for the following 2 hours. Like, it is the worst. Like, it's Saw, but instead of cutting off parts of your body, it's smug white liberalism. Like,
but that movie,
the all white version of Get Out.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
Get Out, Karen, that's so funny.
Get Out by getting back in by never leaving.
I don't think does it, but The Ringer. I sent you guys that article about what The Ringer qualified as like bad movies that are good. Like, uh-huh. It doesn't. That movie didn't set out with the intention of being as bad, good and bad as it is.
Right. Well, the thing is that I feel like most of these things are things that, like, set out to be good and were just so wrong. Like, another piece of schlock that I deeply adore is it was a 3/4 season replacement on NBC in 2010. Oh, no one remembers it. It was called 100 Questions. And it was a very solid attempt at making a 1990s multicam sitcom. But 15 years too late. So it was like Bad Friends ripoff that was just so archly, like, misguided in so many ways that I could not stop watching it. I wanted to see more because they were, and I think there is something really important to this, like, grasping at artistic tropes and missing them. That is really important.
The, like, the dead letter office of 90s sitcom world is, like, that is something I want to rifle through.
Yes.
Yeah. To yeah. see all the cancels, to see all the ones that just never made it.
Back to Shasta McNasty.
But I always wonder, like, the way I judge a sitcom is, can I hear the announcer saying it in 5 years? Tonight on 100 Questions.
Yeah. Like,
No. Yeah. No. Tonight on Shasta McNasty.
Would everyone like
tonight on Homeboys from Outer Space.
Would everyone like me to sing the theme song?
No.
Yes.
From 100 Questions.
No. Yes. Oh, well, if you're gonna, please.
Can I ask you a question? And none more. Yeah.
Oh. So kind of like that Bodine's ripoff from Friends. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's so much Bodine and diddly. In the 90s.
Karen, schlock. Schlock you love.
God, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm just too homosexual and I always veer to camp in various ways. The thing is, I love a lot of things that have at their core a certain level of earnestness, but that I know aren't very good.
Yeah.
Like, I am down for any rom-com. I will watch any crappy thing. 27 Dresses, for example, which I think is not a great movie, is one that I can't stop watching over and over again. As long as I'm charmed by the people who are involved, and I'm there for it. And, you know, whereas something like, obviously, like White Chicks, which I've taught in my intro to gender studies class.
I love that movie.
That's a great movie. I mean, you know, but, you know, it sort of knew that it was it knew that it was going to be a particular kind of broad comedy. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it knew that it would be rejected by a certain cognoscenti that wanted, you know, like, quality material. But that's not a movie that everyone thinks of like, oh yeah, White Chicks, that's such a classic. It's so great. But I do think that it's bad enough. It kind of takes enough of the bad, and that it is a kind of pleasurable and schlocky watch, you know, especially because, you know, come on, like, it's been a while since we've had some good whiteface in the theaters.
It's really true. She's right.
My friend Heather, who is in White Chicks, had the best line about 27 Dresses when it was coming out, which was just, nobody has 27 best friends. And I feel like that's why.
Well, that's why the movie is so bullshit.
Yes, that's why.
She can't even give them her undivided attention.
That's why it's schlock, because it has this overclocked sense of what we think we want from a romantic comedy. And it's sort of like there is like a porniness to how much it is trying
it's
to
totally
give,
porny.
Like shove what you want at you instead of like being a movie.
I would say that any film that has a like crowd Benny and the Jets sing along is already trying too hard.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Good call.
Forgot about that. Jesus.
Do you guys remember that first Adam Sandler comedy that came out on Netflix? It was like,
I'm already scared.
It was like a cowboy movie.
Something eight.
It was something six, because
Ridiculous Six.
Yes,
and it was one of those things that really was just like a comedy where every fucking joke misfires, and I don't want to watch that. Like, I tried to hate watch it, and
but
I
like
couldn't.
A Million Ways to Die in the West again, like the Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, I walked out of that. I was
was dreadful. I'm a tomboy, so I'm more likely to watch schlock than camp. I will watch camp too, but I was thinking this weekend I found myself watching Watchmen.
Yeah,
which to me is just schlock. I mean, like in a world where we're like being force-fed comic book movies, heroes, villains, otherwise, whatever. I'm still struggling to figure out how a movie beautifully made, but with so it to me is the reason why we've had such poorly made DC films. And I'm sorry, I feel bad for Zack Snyder, but like everything he makes is garbage.
Yeah.
And he is, to me, the king of schlock right now. Like everything he makes is super, super schlocky.
Not Michael Bay, not.
No, because like I don't even consider Michael Bay, you know? Yeah. Like we all know he's gross. But then I think of the other movies that I've always like Fear with Mark Wahlberg and Reese Witherspoon.
Okay, yes.
That to me is camp schlock.
Yeah. I've never seen it, but I know that he fingers her on a merry-go-round.
And then Wild Horses at crescendo.
That's like the only thing anybody knows about that.
Yes, the crescendo. The Wild Horses,
like,
the crescendo
the
of it is the
But I feel like horror and thriller, it is much easier for horror and thriller to be schlock.
Then where does Mannequin and Nothing But Trouble fit into your wheelhouse?
Okay. I'm going to say that Mannequin is camp. I'm going to say that Nothing But Trouble, which is an amazing film, is schlock. Because that really is, I mean, that's exactly the kind of So Bad It's Good I want to watch. Because, like, almost like The Nanny, anytime somebody is throwing jokes at me and two out of the three jokes, I'm going to be like, that's terrible. And the third joke, I'm going to be, that's very funny.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy that. Nothing But Trouble. Tell the young people. The children have forgotten.
They don't know. I can't wait. Nothing But Trouble stars Cornelius Chase, better known as Chevy Chase, and Demi Moore as like Upper West Side Manhattanites who decide to drive to New Jersey for some god-awful reason and make a wrong turn somewhere into like this pisshole of a town that's basically a shithole sitting on top of a shithole.
Yeah.
And the mayor of the town is Dan Aykroyd in like several different costumes. There's John Candy. Was it John Candy that was the oversized baby?
Yeah, it's just like, it's gross and weird.
It's gross. It's basically like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
What?
And the Addams Family.
Yes.
If it were like thrown in a blender and made funny.
Yeah, it's weirdly satisfying while clearly not being good.
I feel queasy from that description.
It's disgusting to watch.
Well, all over the place.
What about something like Bonfire of the Vanities or Ishtar, which is this sort of like big budget movie that just completely misses?
Loved Ishtar, actually. Okay. And I saw it in the theater and I was like, what's everybody talking about?
Yeah. Because that was like
playing for fools is a na 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 na. I still remember some of those songs.
Yeah.
I found it thoroughly charming. But I understand how bad it was.
We are going to rehab Ishtar here and now on this podcast. It was last.
For the children, it was a byword for film failure in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. It is Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman as a pair of lounge singers who become spies in a fictitious Arab nation. Isabella Johnny co-stars. And the thing is like, it's not
better than Spies Like Us.
It's just like, it's slow and never gets going, and I have a hard time watching something that, like, it's easier to laugh at badness when it is, like, over-the-top horror badness as opposed to just sort of, like, this doesn't quite work.
Slightly pleasant badness?
Yes.
But yeah, it needs to be over-the-top.
The thing is, I usually like slightly pleasant badness in a very sort of, like, I like romantic comedies, you know.
Well, there was music. That was one of the things that kept me compelled. Also, the traveling around the world with lounge singers, like, you know, that's just like my life.
Like, so your life.
So, but you know, but yeah, music kind of makes it all better, which brings me to the question of, like, how do we deal with the best of the worst music? Is there a way that we can think of it beyond this notion of the guilty pleasure? Which, you know, because for me, I don't think, like, a lot of my listening to songs or to music or appreciating music that people think is bad is necessarily guilty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd like to kind of, like, refuse that framing of, you know, shit that's really bad but that feels so good. Like, I can't help myself, but I fucking like all of Maroon 5's dumbass songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm like, ooh, 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 you know, like, I'm just like, man, it gets me every time.
Mm-hmm. Or like,
at least one of them is like, hook, line, sinker.
Yeah.
I, of course, have notoriously bad taste in music, but there is a school of, like, bad song, like the Christmas Shoes song, where I don't, like, I love hearing the Christmas Shoes song just because of the weird feeling it gives me that that song is so terrible. Margaret, are you not familiar with the Christmas Shoes song?
I can't. I'm trying to call it up, and I can't get there.
It's a Christian Christmas song about a little boy who is waiting in line, who asked the person up in front of him in line to buy shoes for his mother so she could wear them in heaven.
Oh, my
God.
Well, then this brings up another kind of sideline of all the, like, camp, schlock, and then schmaltz.
Yes.
Like, that's basically schmaltz.
That is schmaltz, yes.
Yeah. Yes. And so there's, like, the sentimental Hallmark card version of the bad movie or the bad song, which I think another thing with the music, though, too, is, like, when you think about it, there's actually tons of shitty music all the time. And the reason we know about more, like, schlocky movies is because, like, it's kind of amazing how, considering how much movies cost to make, that they get released and are out there.
Yeah.
Whereas music is just, like, everywhere. It's all over the place.
That's what you see in The Disaster Artist. It costs so much money to make a shitty movie. Imagine when you spend $200 million and the movie is still a piece of shit.
Right, like the Kevin Costner disaster was at Waterworld.
Waterworld.
But, you know, I do think the way that we can talk about schlocky music is almost talking about the, you know, so-called, like, classic rock greats who then have like a complete dud of an album. You know what I mean? Like Bob Dylan's Christian album, or like, I mean, that's like kind of a famous one.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always think
many Rolling Stones albums.
Yes, around this time of year, I'm always reminded of Paul McCartney's grievous sins against Christmas songs.
Oh, God.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
God.
Like, I would stab that song in the neck.
I will see you with pistols at dawn, Margaret
Wappler. Wappler, I've made it all the way to a week before Christmas and haven't heard it.
Oh.
I actually thought, have you heard it?
Oh, yeah. It was playing in Target the other day.
I've been avoiding it.
Yeah, Tarjay's got it on.
One of the things I like about, like, terrible music is the way that it really can saturate deep in a significant way. Who Let the Dogs Out? Whoomp, there it
is. Mambo number 5.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Mambo number 5.
Come, my lady. Come, my lady. Be my butterfly.
Baby. Because... Or, no, Informer. Informer. I love the Safety Dance. I think it has a cute beat.
Yeah.
It's a bop.
Yeah,
I listen to that
song.
Fucking shit all the time.
But something like Whoomp, There It Is like...
the best song.
The thing is, I think it's the best song, but it's also like a hook with nothing attached to it.
It's womp. There it is. He's telling you the base is
just a womp without a home.
That's what it is. It's a womp without a home. He's telling you womp.
Or apple,
there it is.
Apple bottom jeans.
Boots with a fur.
They should teach that in like logic class.
They really should.
Like womp. There it is.
I would like to
it's really
He's
deep, actually.
You.
Let's steer us back to visual media for just a moment to say we have so many times on this show discussed fauxtige TM television. And there used to be this glorious age of schlocky, like the 1980s had so much schlocky TV.
So much schlocky.
Like we had scripted TV shows that were mostly just propeller boat races through the Everglades or like Bo and Luke Duke trying to avoid Boss Hogg. And like we don't have TV like that anymore.
There was like Riptide and Airwolf and Cannon and it was just always, it was a series of white men doing stuff.
And Small Wonder.
And Small Wonder.
Small Wonder. Margaret, share what Small Wonder was.
Oh, teach these kids, Wobbler.
Oh, my God. Small Wonder is amazing because it's like almost psychedelic in how slow and weird it is.
Yes.
So like,
I remember trying to explain to my dad, it's a family sitcom where the dad has built a small female robot who wears a pinafore at all times.
And she would just shut down randomly at times.
And then
the
go
day,
sleep
and
in
open
the closet.
Her back and fix her. But, like, what the fuck is that?
But Small Wonder was like elevated in so many ways, not just its shitty scripts. I remember as like an 8-year-old trying to explain to my dad I had seen this show and there was something so wrong with it, but it was syndicated. It was
like you're talking about the monsters under the bed.
Yeah. It was one of the first shows I had ever seen that was shot in video, so it had like such a clear picture to it that the badness was sort of like magnified.
But it wasn't. It was also in the same syndication block as Out of This World.
Yes.
Yeah. And like that show Throb.
Yeah.
Oh, would everyone like to hear me sing the theme song to Throb?
Please.
Throb to the beat, to the beat, to the heartbeat. Throb to the beat, to the beat, to the heartbeat. It was so good.
Well, what's her name?
Jane Leaves. Yes.
That was her debut. And I remember there was like this 3-episode arc featuring Billy Vera and the Beaters. Because it was a show about a record, like an independent record company. In some city. I think probably maybe Chicago or something.
Yeah.
And yeah. And
was
I
that,
don't remember. Anything.
Was that Scott Baio's show?
No, there was some other dude who I can't remember, but he was kind of like a more rodentious Don Johnson.
But the birth of
whatever that means.
Like
I'm just picturing a little quivering nose now.
But like syndication made it possible to make these TV shows that didn't have the support and resources of network shows. And so it was kind of like the beginning of cable. But
USA Up All Night.
But we didn't know how to make cheap cable at that point in time, so everyone was just still trying to make multicam sitcoms, and they were terrible.
But we didn't have investment in them. Like, I don't remember a single episode of Charles in Charge, the narrative thread.
Yeah. I mean,
but I've seen all of them.
What a terrible show. But I, more than anything, I miss those weird action-y shows just because, like, I don't understand why America's still super dumb. Why? Like,
it's just all gone to reality TV now.
Yeah.
But the thing is that means that we have these shows that think that they are smart, you know, a CSI, which is just a slower version of Riptide.
Right.
Where everyone wears a shirt all the time.
Right.
Basically, though, everything on Bravo is like trash TV at this point, except for
but it has like a
Top Chef,
a faint like artistic sheen,
and like it's reality, and like nobody ever gets in a propeller boat in reality. Now, I mean, maybe
they do on the Real Housewives.
They do on the Real Housewives.
Can I bring up really quick? Like, do you guys remember that Cartier ad from about 4 or 5 years ago? The L'Alzé de Cartier.
No. Tell me about this.
It's basically Melania Trump, like, as an ad.
Okay.
Like, it's, like, 15 minutes long, and it was something Cartier put together to, like, tell the world of their illustrious history. And it's basically just this, like, bejeweled snow leopard that just, like, jumps through, like, beautiful CGI animated scenes. You guys don't know this? Oh, my God. Please look it up, because it really is Melania. In fact, I feel like Melania Trump, like, basically spawned out of this ad.
Yeah. There's always the white diamonds. Yeah. And like,
oh, yes.
Kind
oh,
of like,
it's very White Diamond.
These have always brought me luck.
You guys, I feel like we tried hard to talk about schlock, but we just talked about camp. Because that's who we are.
We are just in the camp.
All right. You are listening to Pop Rocket, live from the camp. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, everybody. I'm Justin McElroy.
And I'm Dr. Sydney McElroy.
Every week, we release a medical history podcast called Sawbones.
We go over the history of the dumbest, grossest, weirdest stuff humans have been doing to each other since the dawn of mankind.
But it's a funny show.
But it's also so disgusting and stomach-turning, you won't believe it.
But it's also like, funny. It's funny.
It is the wildest, grossest, nastiest stuff you can imagine.
It's a real hoot. It's called Sawbones, and we release it every week on iTunes, wherever podcasts are sold, and right here on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I am your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler.
And Karen Tongson.
And every week, if you're new to the podcast, every week on the podcast, I ask a question, and you haven't heard it before because you're new to the podcast, but I'm going to ask it now. The question is, what's your current jam? So I'm going to ask Karen Tongson, professor, what her current jam is.
It's been a little over a year since George Michael passed, my dear Jorge Miguel, my very first like heartthrob boyfriend in pop music. And so, of course, I had to go with a song that is both schlocky, schmaltzy, and maybe has a touch of camp to it as well. Last Christmas. So melancholy to hear that. And you know what, the aspect of this that's campy, it's not necessarily the song itself, but the music video. He has so many hair flips in that music video.
Yes.
It's like amazing.
He and Princess Diana had the same hair for most of their career.
As well as the lead singer of Squiddy Politti. They were all there. There's this moment in the mid 80s where everybody had that. Anyway, okay. Bye, dear George.
That song is like a spa treatment.
It really is. God, that's so dead on.
Winter Mitchell, what is your jam?
Bjork must be just like out of whatever she was put through by Matthew, because she has written a beautiful new album called Utopia. And it is just her being like, okay, I'm slightly healed, so now I can deal with you people. She seems to be in a better mood, and I found myself on Thanksgiving morning just drawing a hot bath and saying, whatever happens in this moment, the moment I press play on track one, I'm going to just dive into it. And it was the perfect scenario.
Wonderful.
Her first track on this album is called Arise in My Senses, and it's a beautiful, beautiful ballad. All there is, and inside my heart sees a line of
truth. Relax a little open arms are just awake tonight.
She's just, I get chills when I hear her voice, and super emotional. And I feel like I understand like her emotional depth in any moment, depending on where the album is. And I feel like she's like ready to be like, okay, I'm okay. And I don't know. It's a really good album. It's a really good effort from her at this point in her life.
Margaret and Winter, you guys are both big Bjork fans. There's always a question I've had about her. What percentage of her music is produced by elves?
1,010%.
1,010%.
I have known you guys too long. I was trying to soft sell that really hard. 2 years ago, they would have fallen for it, you guys.
Yeah, exactly. We knew that was coming.
Yes. Margaret Wappler, what's your current jam?
My current jam is a song that I think has been widely regarded as schlock for most of its life, but really has been reclaimed at this point and celebrated and heralded, rightfully so, in my opinion. And that is Escape, the Pina Colada song by Rupert Holmes. So this is from 1979. And when it came out, people were just like, what is this fucking thing? And when you think about it, the late 70s, early 80s is like a nice ripe time for schlock. There's a lot of schlock coming through the pipeline. But I think it upset people because it's just so openly dorky, which is why it's appeared in certain things that celebrate dorkiness in general, like the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. And then my favorite usage of the song is from the movie American Splendor, in a scene where the super nerd Toby Radloff, who's played by Judah Friedlander, is explaining to Harvey Pekar, who's played by Paul Giamatti, Revenge of the Nerds. So I was hoping we could play a little clip of that, because the song actually appears behind the scenes of them talking.
I was tired of my lady. We've been together too long. Hey, Toby.
No, you can't have any of my White Castle hamburgers, so please don't even ask.
Yeah, can I have a fry?
Okay, but just a couple, Harvey. I'm not going to be eating dinner until very late, and this has got to hold me over.
Yeah, what do you got, church function?
No, I'm driving to Toledo to see a movie. Would you like to come?
Nah, you know, I gotta go to Delaware tonight. I'm getting married.
Oh,
yeah.
Why Delaware?
Well, you know, the chick I'm marrying is from Wilmington. You know, plus I gotta help her move her stuff back here. Why are you driving to Toledo to see a movie, Tub?
It's not playing at the Maple Town.
Okay.
I didn't know you had a girlfriend, Harvey.
Yeah. We met last week. Tub. What movie could possibly be worth driving 260 miles round trip for?
It's a new film called Revenge of the Nerds. It's about a group of nerd college students who are being picked on all the time by the jocks. So they decide to take revenge.
So what you're saying is you identify with those nerds.
Yes, I consider myself a nerd, and this movie has uplifted me. There's this one scene where a nerd grabs the microphone during a pep rally and announces that he is a nerd and that he is proud of it and stands up for the rights of other nerds.
Right on.
Then he asks all the kids at the pep rally who think they are nerds to come forward. So nearly everyone in the place does. That's the way the movie ends.
All right. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Right? I identified as a nerd.
It's just the best use of that song humanly possible.
That's so beautiful.
And if you guys haven't seen American Splendor, see it. It's a great movie. It's based on Harvey Pekar, very grouchy, grouchy cartoonist life, who used to be a regular on David Letterman back in the day.
Wait, you think Pina Colada in this movie is a better use of it than...
Guardians?
No. Fuck that movie. I've lost all interest in a lot of shit in 2017, especially Chris Pratt shit. What's the movie with Cameron Diaz and Christina Applegate?
Oh, The Next Best Thing or The Sweetest Thing?
The Sweetest Thing.
Oh, bring in that. You should just bring it in next time. We'll have a compare off.
A compare off
the
with that?
The Pina Colada compare off.
If you like Pina Colada.
That movie is a shit show.
That's a shit show.
All right.
Is that schlock or camp?
I would say it is schlock.
Okay.
My jam is schlock. Let's hear it. I love it.
A little bit of Monica in my life. A little bit of Erica by my side. A little bit of Rita's all I need. A little bit of Tina's what I see.
What a dumb, repetitive song. And I love it so much. And
all
I,
the Ritas, Tinas, and I know. Monicas were living life in 2001.
98, I
believe. 1998.
Louis
Vega. 9/11.
Louis Vega.
Do you know if the Victoria Secrets show was televised at that time, he would dead ass be singing this song.
Oh, he totally
did.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did, right? Of course.
Was he European?
He is from, his family is from Uruguay. That's how much I like this song.
Wow. You read the whole Wikipedia from top to bottom, three scrolls, and you bookmarked it.
No, it was like a conversation we were having at the time. The conversations were, Lou Bega, is he Mexican? And Ricky Martin, is he gay?
And you were like, no, I have it in bookmark right here. Don't worry.
We learned the answers to both of them through time.
You got the receipt.
You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winnie Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, and Karen Tongson. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Please review us on Apple Podcasts and rate us 5 stars. It's our favorite number. We currently don't have any reviews, and you should know that every time we have an episode where there are no 5-star reviews, Margaret Wappler's...
loses a limb.
Her bone density decreases.
It's like a video game where you see like the character strength going down in the top right-hand corner.
And in 2018, if we don't get these on like at a clip, I'm going to start going Trump on all y'all.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Which could mean many different
things. I got Russian friends. You got a 750 credit score? Wake up tomorrow, it'll be 300.
Winter is our Jill Stein. You guys, this is our last show of the year. Thank you guys so much for listening, posting on the Facebook group, and helping us get 3 million more downloads. That's pretty goddamn impressive.
More than 3 million.
More than 3 million.
So maybe one or two of those people could give us a 5-star review.
Please. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket. Or join our Facebook group and join the discussion. We are a production of MaximumFun.org. And our producer is the sunny Christian Duenas.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.